News Radio WJPF. We're joined by Brad Cole, Executive Director of the Illinois Municipal League. Brad, how are you this morning, Chief?
I'm well. Good morning, Tom. Good morning to your listeners.
I have a question. I have two that I'm kind of counting on you to explain how much of a deal or an issue this is. I'm going to flip a coin to decide which one I'm going to go with first. How about this? The Safety Act. And I, to be honest with you, Brad, I was surprised in speaking with state's attorneys from smaller offices, the implications of no cash bail on their finances in their counties and saying they won't be able to keep they'll have to have some money come from another area. Is this something you're hearing statewide?
Well, the issue of no cash bail, which of course was in the Safety Act and was upheld by the Supreme Court earlier this week, does involve an issue that was not talked about when it was passed, which is what kind of financial impact does it have on counties or jurisdictions that do receive some of that bail that sometimes is forfeited and does generate other revenue for state's attorneys.
Or part of the fine and it's already paid. I mean, I didn't realize how many different ways it stays in the office once it's collected.
Yeah, once it's there, it stays there, and it offsets some of the penalties and other things to make sure that the fees or fines are paid. You know, I think that will have an impact. Obviously, the small jurisdictions, counties that are operating on a much smaller budget depend on those dollars and being able to get those dollars a lot more than bigger counties, but it affects everybody equally. That is something that was not discussed. I think the bigger issue in general is how does this really relate to alleged criminals that will not be detained or held or, you know, may just go right back out on the street. And the concern has been, will they commit other crimes or will they just go back to doing what they were doing? And what is the incentive for them to try to get their act together?
Right now, and that's something that I find very interesting because I hear so much about that recidivism, and also there's the heat of the passion of the moment if they are not done committing whatever it is, and it's some violent act, which, of course, judges have the ability to keep them in jail. But, you know, there's an interesting idea here and a couple of these implications, but I wonder, because some people are using the term that the Safety Act with cashless bail is an unfunded mandate. Do you think that moniker is accurate?
Well, I got to tell you, there's more unfunded mandates than ever before, and we publish a report at the Illinois Municipal League, which can be downloaded on our website at iml.org/mandates. It lists hundreds of mandates that are proposed every General Assembly. You know, I think in a roundabout way, this is one. The Safety Act itself has a number of mandates in it, most of which are unfunded. Things like officer-worn body camera requirements and other things. Now, there will be some grant funding available, but this is probably another unfunded mandate, the cashless bail part, because of what you were hearing from state's attorneys about not being able to have some of those dollars to recoup costs through fees or fines later.
All right, now here's another one. This had to be explained to me slowly. And so now I want to ask you, because I want to get your opinion, see what you've heard from your municipalities, because it's not exactly in our ballywick. All right, so immigrant health care. The governor cuts it off, whatever it is, age group of 42, above, and then $500 million, where there was a projected $1.1 billion. And, you know, and I talked to more and more people, and they said, yeah, sure, the government governor cut it off at $500 million. He took some grief and still is for that. But it doesn't change the fact these very same people in all age groups will show up in emergency rooms. They will be cared for. Who will pay for it? And now when this happened in Texas, it literally pushed hospitals out of business because you can't say no to the health care. You're a nonprofit organization. You're nonprofit. It's kind of the mandate you get from, you know, having that nonprofit status, I guess. Is this the problem that I've been led to believe it is? Because once the state's done paying, somebody will still pay and it'll be pushed to the local level.
Well, that is the case in a lot of ways currently, whether this program was there or not. There's indigent care that is offered, and hospitals throughout Southern Illinois and across the state are left with dealing with patients who come in that can't pay, that don't pay, and you know they basically have to subsidize that through their private pay customers as well as their insurance customers. But once this funding runs out, the expectation is there that that will still be provided, and that is left to the healthcare providers, whether that's hospitals or doctors or nurses or other critical care providers that are doing what they're supposed to do, and they want to do that, which is help people and help people get better and identify issues for a better and healthier community. But it will place a burden financially on those healthcare providers and hospitals. So yes, that is going to be an impact later whenever these dollars run out.
It's interesting. One of our listeners who are listening to this conversation this morning says the migrants should sue Illinois for promised health care. It's an interesting comment this morning. So once again, this overused unfunded mandate. I don't know if I could call it a mandate, but rocking a hard place most certainly wouldn't be inaccurate.
Well, it's a serious expectation that is placed on a specific industry, in this case healthcare, to be able to meet the needs of folks based on an expectation given at the state level that those needs will be met. And of course, as I indicated a minute ago, healthcare providers want to help people. They want a healthy community to serve, and that's their mission, whether that's Southern Illinois Healthcare through Harrisburg Medical Center or Carbondale Memorial Hospital or St. Joseph Hospital or Heron Hospital or any of them throughout your listening area. That's what they're there for. But the financial reality is that it's harder and harder to do that every day, especially with state and federal mandates.
And the fact that they're already dog paddling from one month to the next, trying to keep their financial noses above water because of the structural changes and staffing changes that are a result of COVID-19 and traveling nurse care and costs.
Absolutely. And that's been an issue with doctors, you know, trying to attract and retain enough physicians. And having to hire outside physicians that are traveling. And we see that now even more so with nurses and certified nurse anesthetists and everybody else that are needed to do all of the other things around physicians and that are a part of a hospital or doctor's office visit. And those costs are just going through the roof, and they have for the last several years.
By the way, we just got a text from Donnie, who's listening in the St. John. He's in a Caribbean island on a beach listening to us this morning. Thanks, Donnie. You really helped our morale.
Yeah. Is this supposed to be uplifting or depressing?
Bring back something. That's what the cost is there. You and I have seen it. We've talked about it. Some people use euphemisms, polarized, you know, all such deep divisions have not seen since the Civil War. And what, you know, really wasn't a bad thing and then grew in Washington and has been perpetuated to the state level of politics is highly adversarial. I mean, it's just a couple of notches above a knife fight. And I've seen that leak to the local level as well. And I was wondering, does that have anything to do with some new programs that you're introducing at the Illinois Municipal League on civility?
Well, Tom, you're, as always, spot on with an issue that we're seeing across local governments because of what we're seeing at the state and national levels. Now, most people, not everybody, but most people like their Congress member, but they don't like Congress. It's like they like their attorney, but they don't like attorneys in general. And what we're seeing at the congressional level are these debates and lack of action and a lack of civility that has spread to state level governments too. Now, whether that's in Illinois or Missouri or Kentucky or Tennessee or any of the states, we're seeing how the national discourse is filtering down to the state level and then now getting to the local level. With my colleagues around the country at other state municipal leagues, we've talked about this from South Carolina to Colorado to Tennessee, about and Minnesota, Michigan, about how there is a lack of civility at city council meetings now. And we've been presenting at the Illinois Municipal League since April a civility pledge that we developed. And the folks that don't like it have said, well, this is just to limit my free speech, or you don't want me to defend my position, or I'm not going to listen to somebody that is, you know, saying things that are not right. Well, that's not it exactly. I want to read to you the civility pledge. In the interest of civility, I pledge to promote civility by listening, being respectful of others, acknowledging that we are all striving to support and improve our community, and understanding that we each may have different ideas for achieving that objective. That's it. And the goal that we are promoting is for local officials, city council members, village board, trustees, mayors, to say, look, we are going to be civil. What does civility mean? What does that mean? Well, polite, courteous, respectful, listening, acknowledging other views. You don't have to agree with them. You don't have to vote with them. But we have to get local government, especially, back to doing the people's business and doing it in a civil manner, because potholes don't have Republican or Democrat titles associated with them. Public safety affects everybody. The health and general welfare of a community is not a partisan issue, or it should not be. And we're promoting our civility pledge to address this. And I'm going all around the state offering discussions and training from the very smallest to the very largest communities talking about this issue, because we're seeing it more and more where it's impacting the effectiveness of being able to get government services provided to the people.
You know, what I find interesting is a lot of conversation I've had about this over the past. One was a recent conversation with Associated Political Science Anthropology teacher at SIU, and we were talking about politics, and basically the summation of the conversation was that politics is a surrogate for war, for the veritable knife fight in the alley. So, you know, maybe we shouldn't expect it to be all clean. It never has been. And I thought that was an interesting night, because I kind of got that sense over these last couple of years that it is much more like a knife fight than once it was. And another one that my science teacher in junior high, his name was Ed Bradley. And I Ed knew that I have a mouth on me. And he says, you know, you can say anything you want if you increase your vocabulary, and you can use anything you can, and you can get your point across with the vocabulary, no matter how hot or how agitated you are at any given time, if you pick the right words and you stay within the coloring lines, the boundaries. You know, but at the same time, there are some people that say some things these days that you understand why people jump out of their seats. This is an interesting and, I think, needful thing that you're addressing, but boy, you bit off a big one here, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that you and I learned 1,000 years ago growing up was sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. We've lost that, and now we're at a shouting match level using those words in most cases. And the other side of that is, I saw a cartoon the other day. It was an old lady reading the newspaper talking to the old man who was standing over her shoulder. And she said, well, I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know what's true, what's fact, what's not. And he said, well, if I agree with it, it's true. And that's where we are right now.
Right.
And that's not reality.
It's interesting. One of our guests, Jim, just sent me a note. He says, you know, I've heard about people moving to other states that favor their views on certain topics like a divided country by certain issues. Matter of fact, I've read this and seen these statistics just over the last couple of days, that I'm just going to move somewhere. I'm going to go somewhere where they understand and I agree with them more, and I see my policies carried through. And at the same time, you know, I've seen people, you know, over the last 7 years, I guess, where, you know, they were the godfather of their child, you know, and now they don't talk to each other because about the last presidential election and the one before it. I mean,
right.
It's got not to just local level. It's at the Thanksgiving dinner table where at this point people are saying, you know, we're not inviting him. You know, he's going to come in here and read, you know, to each according to his need to us over the Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, now, remember also, we didn't used to talk about politics and religion.
And going to prison was also a rule in our house.
Right. Now, the issue about people determining where they want to live, you know, because of like-minded attitudes, that's normal, and I think that's okay, and that's been the case forever. But what we're talking about here is being able to disagree without being disagreeable.
Right.
You know, being able to have conversations and say, I don't agree with that. And maybe because of that, I'm going to decide to move to a different place where I do agree with things. Absolutely. But let's not have a shouting match calling somebody else's mother out when what we're really talking about is just a policy issue or a political discussion.
Yeah, although I'll be honest with you, with as much skin as you and I have in that game, don't you find that personally hard, Brad?
Oh, it's incredibly difficult. Absolutely. And I mean, for people that are in the public arena, it's even harder.
But you've bit your tongue more than once. I would imagine you probably get the group rate on having sutures at this point.
Yeah, I do. I buy those in bulk. The issue, of course, is you have to measure that. You know, how you act and react is important. You know, Mark Twain said, all things in moderation, including moderation. Well, people have to know how to moderate themselves. And if you just, you know, what else did we learn? If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. We've lost some of those old sayings or mottos or admonitions in how we do things. Now, if you don't have anything nice to say now, you put it on social media.
Right. Or in front of the school board. You know,
I mean, right?
I watch those videos as well. Before, because this is subject, you know, you and I ought to probably talk more because you're doing some training on this. I'm putting some weight behind this. You're doing some training, is that correct?
Absolutely. We're going around. You can go to our website, iml.org/civility, and people can get this information. We go talk to city councils and village boards all over the state sharing this and getting their feedback. It's something that's not going away, and we're trying to make the environment better and improve it through awareness in this sense.
All right, before I let you go, when I got the email yesterday saying the Boys and Girls Club was closing down after 19 years, gosh, 19 years ago sounded kind of like that might have been while you were governor, while you were mayor of Carbondale.
It was, and I was surprised to see that, too, and, of course, heard the conversations on your show earlier today about it. It's sad. You know, it was something that was needed. I was on the city council in Carbondale when it was being talked about originally, and to give credit where it's due, a lot of people helped put that together.
Yes.
One of the people was my opponent in my first mayoral race, Maggie Flanagan, worked very hard in Carbondale to generate support to get the Boys and Girls Club started. Of course, there was a facility there in Carbondale, and they expanded to be in Marion, too. A lot of young people have been helped, and, you know, I certainly hope that they can find the resources or the staffing to be able to continue, but a very abrupt announcement that as of tomorrow, it's not going to be functioning anymore. And I think that just shows how hard times are right now, but boy, in these hard times, we have to come together and do as much as we can. And when we look at other issues, social network issues, crime issues, economic issues, it has to start with the young people and Boys and Girls Clubs all across the country, but especially the Boys and Girls Club of Southern Illinois has been a positive factor in addressing those issues, and I hope that they can find a way to continue in the long term.
You know, a person just simply texted on the American Monument text line, our conversation about civility. Says nowadays, it's good versus evil. That's the difference. And I understand the sentiment there. I do understand it. Because, you know, when you have a particular stance, and because I've yelled it at a TV going, you know, depending on what's on there, I understand that comment, and I understand it completely.
Yeah, and of course, we all think we're on the side of right. And
I am. See, I mean, it's that easy with me, and people have said, you think you're right. It's because I am. I mean, I don't, you know, and I don't consider that stubborn either. But, you know, it all depends on the subject. Well, whether I will acquiesce at some point. And you and I will talk more about this soon. Hey, Brad Cole, Executive Director of the Illinois Municipal League, really appreciate your time today, man.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for the work you're doing, and thanks to everything that your listeners are out there doing to make their communities better.